It's Wednesday, February 25th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 138 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 50 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
For Chrysalis, because he is stuck at the TV station helping with a DTV conversion, I bet he's going to have some good stories coming out of that. I'm going to start this episode out with something of a downer, but I don't think it's entirely a downer because I think, while it's certainly a tragic story, there's a real opportunity here. There's a gentleman by the name of Nick, who is a Fear the Boot community member, very active on our forums, goes by the name Necronomatron on there. Really good guy. And unfortunately, late last year, he and his wife lost a daughter to a very rare heart condition. The child, in fact, was just a baby when she died. Now, that's obviously a downer, but here's what we can do about this. They have decided to turn their loss into an opportunity to do some good, and they have now started a charity through the March of Dimes. Okay, so this is a reputable organization doing a charity through the March of Dimes called Raina's Wings, because the daughter's name was Raina. And what I'd love to see, and there's no little shtick attached to this one, we're not auctioning off Chris's pants or anything like that, but if you want to get out there and do some good, both for these people that are Fear the Boot family members that lost a daughter, and also to anyone else who in the future could have a similar problem, then please check the show notes, go out to Raina's Wings, make a donation to the March of Dimes, and let's just continue showing what a badass community the Fear the Booters are.
Mm-hmm. You're here.
Definitely.
So, Pat, you had a question about GMing, or you wanted a little bit of insight onto something, specifically going off the GM script.
Yeah, I've got a situation that I've been through before as a player, and I'm sure that other people have experienced something like this. And I'd like to get your guys' perspective from a GM standpoint of how you would handle it when your players do something that you may not expect. And what I mean by that is, say you've got like, let's take, for example, a big battle that you've got. You've sort of planned it out. You have maybe three or four points that you want to get to over the course of this battle. And, you know, you have pretty much know how you want the outcome of this battle to be. And you throw that at your players, you know, knowing that it's generally speaking, it's going to go in a fairly predictable pattern. Well, what happened to us in my game is that we had this epic battle, and it's funny because it actually turned up to be sort of a 300-esque battle. It was poorly put together, I will say that, though, but it was, you know, a handful of characters against thousands.
Basically, five dudes versus an army.
And it was, you know, whatever. So it was, but it was well before the movie 300 came out.
Well before the Battle of Thermopylae.
Well, and I guarantee you that this particular DM has absolutely no idea about the Battle of Thermopylae. So it was just one of these things. But anyway, so
was it you?
No, it was not. Actually, I will say this, even at that time, I really didn't know about the Battle of Thermopylae. So, you know, not to be too, you know, pigheaded there. But anyway, so what happened was we had this huge battle, and it all came down to the point where our characters were fighting this battle against the general of the bad guys, and the king on the good guy's side had showed up this battle and was fighting in it. And at the end of it, and what the DM wanted to happen, and it was obvious because at the end it did, is that the king at the very last of the battle was going to come out, sweep through, and kill the bad general.
That's exciting. Well, it's been 4 hours slaughtering mooks, and then the big bad guy at the end, you get to watch get killed.
And so what happened, though, is through the course of this battle, my character had this relatively powerful magical item that I had saved up, and it had like two or three charges on it, period. And it had been established before, I had used it once before, that this device was able, especially on a critical hit, was able to essentially annihilate a person. It was like a gauntlet of frost. It was really powerful. So it could like freeze them solid into like, you know, the whole Terminator 1000 kind of a thing and shatter them into oblivion. So basically through the tide of the battle, this bad guy, the general, was, you know, we were fighting him. Well, I got up to him. I basically moved around behind him, and I had like some thief ability. So I went and ganked him from behind, and I pull out this gauntlet, put it on, and I pointed at him, and I actually rolled a critical. I rolled a 20 on it, and I'm mm-hmm. like, ding, battle over. The thing's he's dead, but not to be. I remember because I was like, oh, this is awesome. You know, it was a great role. Mm. It was by chance. And, you know, and the GM said, he looked at it and I saw the look in his eyes like, yeah. Oh crap, you know?
Yeah.
And without missing much of a beat, he said, okay, well, you see the armor that he's wearing, it gets frosty and it shatters and then it falls off of him. And then you see the king come in, he draws his sword and he cuts his head off. And I'm just sitting there like, what? You know, because basically what it was is that I essentially, ninja, through the play and something unexpected, uh-huh, had basically, you know, stolen his thunder.
You know,
but instead of letting it happen, he just completely trashed it, not in a very good or subtle way, mind you, mm-hmm, and did what he intended to do from the first place. So I guess my long-winded story there is to ask, have you had that kind of thing happen to you guys? And if you do, how do you react to that?
Well, you know, before I even get to that, there's kind of a quirk. It's a very D&D thing. You don't see this in a lot of other games, maybe just because D&D is the most well-known level-based game. But I've never understood why the most experienced person in a kingdom is also the most powerful. For example, in World War II, Patton was not part of any special operations team, and he was not the most powerful guy, and it took 6 bullets to kill him instead of 1. And
I don't know, Pat was pretty badass.
Can you, can you imagine Henry
said that
the
about
Eighth?
Churchill, though.
Well, Churchill's extremely powerful.
Yeah,
I mean, especially since, in fact, he came from a being so powerful that they had to split him into Winston Churchill and Theodore Roosevelt just so the world could contain them. We've talked about this in past episodes, but I mean, can you picture King Henry the Eighth trying to slay a dragon? Can you picture King Henry VIII? Like,
I'm sorry, I can't really picture a dragon in history. I think that's kind of my stopping point. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Right. All I'm saying, have you seen Henry VIII's codpiece, though? Oh, that alone could slay a dragon.
Really?
It is. Well, it in the Tower of...
A dragon, it's a work of fiction, so there's really no problem here.
All right, but what about Gandhi? Gandhi was a high-level character, high charisma.
Oh, extremely high-level priest.
Yeah, very high-level priest.
Literally, he drove off the British with Blade Barrier or something.
Yeah.
But, all right, getting
that
to your point.
Awesome.
Play a D&D game using the principles of passive resistance?
No. Not really. No.
And why would you want to?
I mean, you could be creatively aggressive, you know, but I'm not sure you could really.
I was about to make counterpoints to that joke to keep the joke going, but honestly, you're right. Why in the hell would you ever want to?
Exactly.
The GM, I guess, just sits there and agitates you round after round after round until he just can't take it anymore and quits.
That's it. I roll my dice my own clothes.
Yeah, I think I've played in some games like that before. So, but anyway.
All right. So anyway. There's a mistake that a lot of GMs make, not per se in the execution of the game, but just the way they view the game, which is that they do not understand that this game is fundamentally about the player characters, mm-hmm, not about your plot.
You know who understood that really well is Ed in Fear of the Con 1.
And we're not talking about Ed Healy. We're talking about Ender Melchior from the forums.
Right. His Earthbound game, the one that I gush over and says wonderful, and that I know I cannot wait for his Ghostbusters game. It's going to be wild. I just know it. And although I'm probably all psyching him out now. Sorry, Ed. It was great. I mean, he had his last guy come out, and this was a silly game. It was Earthbound or Mother or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, he had the last guy, the big bad boss, come out, and it was going to be this big, massive fight, and it was going to be this, that, and the other. And the guy starts monologuing. And he starts doing this evil henchman speech, and he's like, blah, 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 blah. Well, my character had this kick ability, right? He had this, like, chi blast. You power it up and power it up and do this massive kung fu kick. And I look at Ed, and I'm like, Ed, I kick him in the junk. They're like, what? He's like, you know, he's standing there, he's talking, he's not even paying attention. Here, I roll the dice, I charge up the chi power, I do this, I do that, and I just aim shot right in this junk, and I roll the dice, and boom, it was like the Savage Worlds exploding dice. It was going crazy, and it was just all this stuff, and I just destroyed him. It was like the nuclear blast of kicking in the junk. And Ed just kind of looked at me for a moment, and he threw up his hands, and he's like, and Chad's character goes and kicks him in the junk, and he's like on the ground, and he's crying, and he just totally went with it. There's no big fight at the end, and I totally drove the game off the road, but it was great. It was wonderful how he just he could have very easily have said, no, he smacks you away or you miss or whatever. And I would have accepted that. I totally would have accepted that. And, you know, because he was making a speech, he was telling his story. But even though it was silly, and even though it was just a one-shot con game, and even though, like I said, it's just a whole bunch of silliness, Ed saw it how a game master should see it. It isn't his story, it's our story.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of people think because they're the GM or DM, or in some ways even called the storyteller, they take that too seriously. Okay, I am the teller of the story. It's like they're dictating a novel. This right. is what happens, and your characters, there's going to be critical things that you're going to do, but it's going to be precisely what I expected you to do and what I scripted you to do, just like your characters in a novel, and you're really just playing along with my story. And that is dead wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole joke about Varen von Badass started
right.
with this idea that a GM creates a villain or an NPC they are so obsessed with mm-hmm. that the story stops being about the characters and starts being about this idiot instead.
Right.
And if you are a game master who struggles with that, then let us tell you what your players are trying to tell you, which is they care more about their characters than they do about your characters.
And that doesn't make them selfish weenies who don't care about your efforts. What it makes them is, we have always said that the characters can only control one thing. There are characters. You control everything else, but the players only have one thing.
Right.
And that's...
Do any of you go to an amusement park and prefer sitting there and watching the roller coaster?
Right.
Do you go to the movie theater and stand outside the theater?
Mm.
No, you go because you want to participate. You want to do something meaningful. And the exact same thing is true in a role-playing game. Don't leave your player characters as spectators to bigger events. You know, I shouldn't say never, because maybe there's a big battle that they're just going to observe.
But if that's events happen outside the realm of control.
So don't take this too extreme. But in the case of Pat's thing.
And it's not always about killing the big bad guy either. You know, it's about any of the important sort of events that happen within a game.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that you guys are saying that. And I figured that was, you know, I figured that was pretty much what you're going to say, because I remember, you know, that specific instance, but also any instance like that, it can be very demoralizing to the players, because just like what you're saying, if you get to the point where you're able to do some really cool things, or you're able to sort of really turn the tide, and your efforts just get brushed aside like that, it just really, it's a slap to the face to your players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that your responsibility as a GM to your players, to yourself even, and to the game, is that when a players are able to do something like that, and it is unexpected, and it's not really what you had planned, you just need to adapt and figure out how to get it in there and just run with it. Because again, like you're saying, it's about the story. It's not your story. It's everyone's story. So
one last reminder, because this show is going to drop pretty close to D-Day. Fear the Con 2, March 6th and 7th. If you've got no plans that weekend, you do now.
That's right.
Check out this website at fearthecon.com. Come out and join us. We're still looking at a worldwide wing night, I believe, the Thursday night before. And then we are looking at a Watchmen viewing between the Friday and Saturday sittings. So this is just an F sleep weekend.
Yes.
Definitely.
In fact, we're kind of looking at that as the motto for Fear the Con 3. Fear the Con 3, F sleep.
Really good prize support this year.
That's right.
One of the little things we're working on, this is, I don't think, the
biggest... Yeah, we have a t-shirt as prize support. It was one of the many things.
Oh, really?
One of the vendors sent us a t-shirt. Zombie, the board game Zombies. Mm-hmm. It's a Zombies t-shirt.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty neat.
All right. So, Chad, also, I missed the game this past Sunday, and while I wasn't there, you, along with Dave and Wayne, and Dave being from the Iron Agenda podcast about War Machine, you guys sat down and put together some packs of pirate cards.
That's right. I have to give a shout out to Chris Engler and Klain Kaluna. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Sounds like a drink.
Actually, that is kind of a cool name if you think about it.
It's like a Final Fantasy character.
But both those guys heard us talking about Pirates of the Cursed Sea, which is a WizKids game that isn't made anymore, that I never got to play, and I thought sounded really cool. You punch out, you have little credit card size things, they come in booster pack collectible game, you punch out the little pieces of ships, and then you snap together, like a puzzle, little sailboats, like Spanish main pirate ships and that sort of Battle of Trafalgar, that sort of thing, ships, right? And then they add in some weird stuff like that. You can get sea monsters, krakens, right. And
so he sent us boxes,
400 unpunched cards. Each ship has point value, and a fleet is 40 points. So it's a couple of ships, a couple of crew members, that sort of thing, maybe an event thing. And what me and Wayne and Dave did on Sunday is we took all of these hundreds of cards. We lined them all out. We sorted them by faction. We sorted them by type. And then we started putting together fleets. And we got somewhere between 60 and 80 fleets. I forget what the exact number is, but a lot of fleets, right? And we've rubber band them all together, and we're going to give them out at Fear the Con. I am going to set up a table where all these fleets are stacked up, and they're all workable 40-point exactly fleets of a particular faction. And the rule is it's one per person, while supplies last, of course. If you take a fleet, you have to put it together and play it, and when you play the game, you get to keep your ships. And our vendor has also been informed that we're doing this, and he has a couple of boxes of the unopened boosters, and he's going to be selling those there. So if this really catches your eye, then, you know, you can buy a couple more boosters to kind of have something to trade and kind of go forward with. So I'll have my fleet there, and I will be looking for some game, so to speak.
I'm new to this, but I'm very anxious to play as well, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, Dan, are you going to be playing Pirates at Fear the Con?
I'm going to try. Mm-hmm. Now, between running three games and probably just walking around trying to make sure that everything's going okay and just trying to be present and available, I don't know how much time I'm going to have for pickup games and such, but I'm definitely going to try. So, hopefully, I do have my stuff. I picked out all kinds of American ships.
Yeah, you're very American.
I know. I did not get John Paul Jones, though, which I'm really pissed off about.
I am very happy because I chose the oddball faction. I chose like a mercenary faction. I have the Nautilus and Captain Nemo.
Awesome.
Captain Nemo is my faction.
Yeah, it is there pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you have this crazy German guy.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the fear of GMing. I've known a lot of people, directly or indirectly through the forum community and such, who don't GM or struggle with GMing for the simple reason that they are afraid to do it. So what I want to walk through here.
Maybe we should come up with a scientific name with that. Like
game master phobia.
What's the Latin for that? We gotta figure that out.
There's probably some pedantic ass listening to the show that'll tell us. So,
I know, there are. I can name them right now.
We'll just sit back and let nature take its course. So, in the meantime, while you guys are working on that,
wow.
Let's talk about some of these now, Chad. Before we get into the two things I want to deal with, which is what these fears are.
And those will be the only two things of discussion. You're going to edit Pat and I out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be me giving
talking
points.
That won't be too hard for me, though, you know.
But we're going to talk about what these fears are and how to deal with them. But before we even get to that,
yes,
you mentioned a much more foundational question.
I did, really?
You really did.
When?
Of should people even be trying to deal with these fears?
Oh, yeah.
Is it possible that just some people out there just ought not GM, and perhaps fear is God's way of keeping you out of fire?
The question is, can anyone who's a gamer and understands what gaming is, you know, you just don't grab a random person off the street, but can anyone who is a gamer be a game master? Or is it there are only some people have got it and some people don't?
I'm going to go with some people got it and some people don't.
You elitist ass.
I will say I think the vast majority of people can do it. Mm-hmm. I think the vast majority of people can do it. And if they're willing to really work at it, the vast majority of people can do it well. I will certainly accept there are exceptions. There are some people that have whatever going on. They're just ineloquent speakers. They're just not that exciting to listen to. They are so nervous that it's not a matter of getting over it like we're talking about here. It's like some kind of fear that you probably need to seek therapy over. There's people out there who are going to have something going on so heavy.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're all crazy. Don't read too much into what I just said.
No, you're saying they're all crazy.
That they shouldn't GM. Biggest thing of all, some people out there don't enjoy GMing.
Right.
And those people absolutely should not GM because the point of a game is to have fun. Mm-hmm. And if you're not having fun, you're screwing up your own experience, and you're probably going to screw up the experience of everyone else, because if you're not having fun, you're not going to do a very good job for a very long period of time.
Right.
So I'd say absolutely there are people out there at Ought.gm. What about you guys? Do you agree with that? Disagree with that?
You know, I hate to speak in absolutes. There's nothing in life is really absolute, but I think that...
That is an absolute, by the way.
It is.
Oh!
I'm a pedantic ass now.
Yes, yes, you are. So what is the Latin for game master phobia, huh? But what I have seen, and this is just anecdotal personal information, you pedantic ass, is that
chrysotosis, by the way, is what we're gonna call
chrysotosis.
It.
Excellent.
That's either phobia or VD. I'm not sure which. He's not on this episode.
What was I gonna say? So
you hate to speak in absolutes.
I hate to speak in absolutes, but what my observations are, what the people that I have seen who have tried to GM, or the reasons people have given for not wanting GMs to GM, it's always been one of two things. One is, I'm just not interested. Right. I'm just here for the story. I just want to run my character. You know, you guys are the storytellers. I really don't care. Or like you said, I'm not going to have fun with it. So nobody else is going to have fun. So let's just move on. That's fine. That's totally acceptable. The other one that I see all the frigging time is roadblocks the person puts in front of themselves.
Yes.
And this is, my game isn't going to be very good, or I'm too afraid to speak, or I'm just not very good at it, or I'm not even a good role player. How could I possibly be a good GM? Or, you know, it's these things, self-defeating attitudes, reasons that have no logical basis, or maybe just some small grain of truth that's been blown up. And I've seen people who take these attitudes and then run a game with the attitudes, and the game, of course, dies because they're defeating themselves. And it, multiple people.
Yeah.
Dawn was a really bad one with this, because she would run a game and the game was fantastic. And we were on the edge of our seats and it was really interesting, except every 15, 20 minutes, she was like, oh, no, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. It's really bad. Oh, I can't do it. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's like, no, we're into it. Go, go, yes. Go. And then she would go, and then we're like, oh, yeah. You know, I'm feeling, yeah, yeah, that's good. Yeah. Oh, no, it's bad. It's terrible. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm just terrible GM. It's like, come on.
You are 100% right.
Woohoo!
I think the majority of people out there that are struggling with GMing, it's not because they can't do it. It's because they psych themselves out.
Right.
They take on some form of production anxiety, whatever you want to call it, where they freak themselves out to the point that they do fail. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they set out to fail. I don't think this is self-sabotage. It's just no different than anything, writer's block or whatever.
Right.
Everyone knows something like this. You can do something really well until you have to do it in front of other people, and then suddenly you can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Pat, you're yes. One who does not GM. Does not like to GM, has no interest in GMing.
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion on this?
Well,
do you think that there are natural born GMs and only those people should GM? Or
I think there are natural born GMs. I don't think that only they should DM. We've said this before, but I think everyone should try their hand at GMing, mm-hmm. because you really need to know what it's like
right.
to be behind the screen.
I totally
so
agree with that.
Just to rehash that, it's good there. But on the other hand, I think that you can get into a situation where too many chiefs and no Indians. Somebody has to be the storyteller.
Right.
But for it to work, you have to have an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the players. And those players have to play into that story. So I think that, you know, not everybody has to be a GM. And I don't think everybody really has what it takes to be a great GM.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I consider myself to be on the other side of that coin. I have to actually make a correction, because I remember back when I did my GMing profile, my wife actually just listened to it this mm-hmm. weekend, and she's corrected me. I have to make a retraction. Apparently, I've done two
you game,
different
GMs. You game
GMs.
Mastered, and you don't even remember.
I game mastered twice, and she even told me, I don't even remember this. I remember it very
Beth
vaguely.
Beth doesn't even game. Beth does game.
She just,
okay.
Unfortunately, at this point, she doesn't, because she has a two-year-old that we have
sure.
to take care of. She had reminded me of another game that I actually mm-hmm. ran. It was, I guess, it was a very short-lived, and it was probably right around the time that I did the other one. So I have done it twice, apparently, even though I would call it maybe one and a half, because I don't remember the other time. But anyway, back to the topic at hand. I just don't think I have what it really takes to be a good GM and bring it to the table. On the other hand, I think that I'm a decent role player, and I think that I can help with the story. I love to react to a story. I love to participate in a story and to help the telling of that story. So I think that it's important to be a player as well. So
I think of when I think of you, Pat. Mm-hmm. I think of a player.
I am a player.
I still want to play under one of your games. I don't want to say this to sabotage the current game, so nothing about plot or anything like that. The next game we play, round robin GMing after the Saw campaign.
I'm perfectly fine with that.
I'll try that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I came up with three basic points where fear crops up,
and on boots,
where I came up with this. Was basically working through the process of GMing. Okay, so what does it take to GM, and where's fear going to crop up along the way? And I think these are a little bit different. They come from the same vein, but they're all a little bit different. The first is when you're writing the game. Mm-hmm. You sit down, you decide you're going to GM, you have to put the game together, you start freaking yourself out, because you freak yourself out, you get writer's block.
Right.
You can't come up with a plot. The whole process intimidates you. You never even make it to the table. You shut yourself down before the whole thing begins.
Mm-hmm.
Point two is you make it to the table, but you're afraid of speaking in front of people. All right. You just can't get up and perform in front of a whole bunch of people.
What's the most amount of people you guys have spoken in front of?
Hundreds, maybe even thousands. Well, I mean, I guess through the boot, we're speaking to thousands every week.
Live.
Okay.
Yeah, in front of a big audience.
Even still going in front of a big audience, it would be hundreds. I mean, I've addressed conventions and such before, and I'm not talking panels. I'm talking about, like, I'd stand up.
Yeah, not like a role-playing game.
Right. I'm not talking about that either. But like, for example, when I gave the Ennie Award, I mean, there were probably hundreds of people in that room. So I've spoken in front of, I tell you, I used to have a big fear of speaking in front of people.
Yeah.
I used to be a type of person. I still get it. Like, if I'm going to call into a radio show to give my thoughts on something, man, they better pick up fast. Because if they don't, my heart starts racing and my hands start shaking. Even now, as I still do this podcast, I still sometimes get that fear. But recent experiences through Fear the Boot have done a lot to eliminate that fear.
So you're saying that if you have a fear of speaking and you want to improve your game mastering, start a podcast?
Sure.
Well, that any situation that can get you out in front of an audience will help with stage fright.
Dan, I've always thought that it was the weirdest dichotomy with you, in that when we're on the mics, you lead the podcast, you're very outgoing, you're very outspoken, and you know, you say what's on your mind, all that sort of stuff. That's not the Dan I know.
No, that's not who I am. And a lot of people are surprised to learn that I am actually a very shy, very nervous person. You put me in a group of people I don't know, it takes a lot for me to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel bad because I've been at conventions where people come up to me and want to talk, and I struggle to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad because they're like, man, they probably think I'm blowing them off. Like, man, who's this idiot or whatever? And that's not at all what's going on.
We were always such a good team when we were young. We'd walk into a party and I would walk in yelling and being the loud guy and get all the attention. And then you would.
I was locating snipers and checking exits.
Yeah.
All right. Smart. So second thing, after speaking in front of people, the third is a fear of conducting the game.
Mm-hmm.
That you're worried that you won't pace the game right. You won't be able to handle what your players do. Mm-hmm. If they throw you something you weren't expecting, like we were talking about at the start of the show, you're going to fall off the script and not know what to do or not know how to handle it, or you're going to lock up. But those seem like the three big points where fear crops up. So as I was writing that list out, I started trying to come up with some pointers that I think will help somebody get past that fear. Because I think regardless of what the exact trigger of the fear is, you're still fundamentally dealing with the exact same issue. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming you can do it. And I'll tell you right now, the majority of you out there listening right now that think you can't do this probably can.
Right.
The bad CGMs are the ones that think they're perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Not the people who realize they've got problems.
Yeah.
So the majority of you,
if you think you have problems, that means you're introspective and
you're sorting those problems out. And you know, if you don't know, ask your group of friends before you're committed. So there's no social capital tied up in this. Sit down with them and say, hey, guys, how would you feel about me running something? Do you think that's something I'd be good at? Or should I just stick with playing?
Right.
And see what they say and how hesitant they are in saying it. And that might clue you in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But here's a couple pointers I came up with, and I'll be interested to hear what you two have to add to this. But the first one is kind of a prep advice, which is do it. Mm-hmm. If the only reason you have to not GM is you're too chicken, that's a horrible excuse. All right, do it. because the longer you avoid something, the more ingrained you're going to become, the more entrenched you'll be in that fear. So get out there and do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this isn't just for game mastering. This is probably for a lot of things in life.
Yeah.
If you're afraid of flying, probably the best thing you can do is get on an airplane. Yep.
It's a metaphor.
You don't know how to swim and you're afraid of water? Take some swimming lessons.
Just don't do it in Australia.
Why?
Because you'll get eaten by a freaking shark.
They only have sharks in Australia?
Well, apparently that's where they're getting eaten all the time now.
Really?
Yeah, read the news, man.
I guess I don't have the shark news tag going, so.
Well,
maybe I'm poor for it.
Hey, you're the one who brought up swimming. That's all I'm going to say.
All right, second thing.
Wow.
Cut yourself some slack. Take a deep breath. Settle down. It's not that big of a deal. All right, put this in perspective.
Yeah. It's just a game.
You're about to run a game for a bunch of friends, even if it completely sucks.
That most likely contains unicorns and dragons. So let's... It's supposed to be fun. Especially Pat's games. Lots of unicorns. Disturbing amounts of unicorns in Pat's games.
Unicorns actually crap rainbows in my brain. Yeah, in my games.
I bet they do.
They do.
In your brain, in your game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that big of a deal if you mess it up. Seriously, don't, or just take a deep breath, cut yourself some slack. It's not going to be as bad as you think. And even if it is, so what?
Right.
Or it's just a game with your friends.
Yeah, that's one thing I notice with people who have that sort of self-defeating thing is that they're always apologizing. Don did this a lot, and I hate to call him out on this, but you know, Dave did that a lot in the game that he ran for. You know, he was constantly stopping and apologizing and saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm messing this up. Oh, it's not fun for you guys, and it's all my fault." It's like,
it was actually that apologizing that ruined the game.
Yeah, yeah, and all the cases I've seen of it, and all the people I've seen of it, it's just you want to look at. I mean, they're trying real hard, and you don't want to be negative, and you want to be supportive, but you just want to look at them and say, shut up, quit apologizing, and run your damn game.
You know, it's just, that's just such a natural reaction, I think, for a lot of people. I've done that myself. I'll, you know, be apologetic, because it's like apologetic. A gut reaction for some, you know, whenever you're sort of like stumbling over things and it's not going well, and you just sort of feel bad because, like, oh, everybody's not having a good time, so you just naturally go to the you know, to the apologies. So I understand it is what I'm saying. But yes, I agree. You know, just try not to. I mean, just keep going and don't worry, because even if you're stumbling around and having a hard time, the players are probably having a good time anyway.
Right.
I mean, it will be fairly obvious if they're not. I mean, they'll be sitting there, you know, playing with their iPhone and updating their Twitter. I mean, that's generally a good indication.
Right. For anyone wondering what that's about, this is what Chad does during everything we're doing. And everything he's doing, you won't believe some of the updates I've gotten recently. All right, third thing I came up with is take it slow. If you've got a fear of airplanes, putting yourself on a 14-hour flight is probably not the best way to go about this. Give yourself something you can pilot. Take a game that you're comfortable with. Take a genre that you're really interested in, and only commit to running like a one-shotter, maybe two or three settings. So it's not like you have this mountain where suddenly you feel overwhelmed. You get in there with a little bit of confidence, but then you realize, holy crap, I've got to entertain these people for the next 8 months. And then you start freaking out. Take it easy. Say, you know what, guys, I want to know how I do as the GM. I want to kind of see what it's like. I'm going to run a one-shotter or two-shotter. Don't hesitate to use some tools. I'll put this as kind of a subpoint to number three. If you're not real comfortable writing the game, a writer block kicking your ass, then take out a module and say, I'm going to run this module.
A module?
Because, you know what? It's got an outline of a plot in there. It's going to have all the stuff you need.
Almost.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, it's going to have at least a script you can generally follow. Yeah,
right.
And if you've talked to your group ahead of time, hopefully they won't be too rough on you and keep trying to run you off those rails just to screw with you.
I think that you need to be upfront, too, with your group and saying, if this is your first time and you have all these concerns, you kind of need to, before the game starts, like, listen, guys. You know, I know we give Bob over here a lot of trouble because he's our game master and he's used to, he could take it. It's like, I haven't done this. I'm really nervous about this. I really want it to go well for you and for me. I just need you to help me out here. Don't run me off the rails. Don't go too crazy. If you have comment, but here's the thing you have to do. You have to take comments afterwards. You have to take, if you want them to concede to kind of not doing certain things to, quote, hurt your game that a veteran game master can just easily handle, be sure to take their feedback afterwards so that if you're running the game into the ground, they can tell you you're running the game into the ground and how, and get advice for improvement and stuff. Your mileage may vary with your group. I mean, you may have a group that's all like, you know, they might tell you to your face, you suck, your game sucks, and it's the worst game you've ever played, but they tell you that because they love you. And that's those guys' way of doing it.
Or they have no social tact.
Social tact, you know.
But if that's the case, problem's not yours now.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, absolutely. In fact, that was my point four, was get some feedback. Don't be afraid to ask these people, because you know what? You might find most of the time they're not nearly as hard on you as you are. Pretty much human nature, you're your own worst critic. Fifth thing, keep going. The worst thing you can do is get partway in, decide, probably without any good reason to think so, that you sucked, and quit, and now suddenly live the rest of your life saying, you know what, not only does game mastering look scary, but I tried it, it is scary, I suck, I'm never going to do it again, which was probably not the case. And even if it was the case, guess what? Nobody's good at anything the first time. Right. I don't care what she told you.
She lied.
Nobody's good at anything the first time. You have to keep going to get better. The fact is, you've done something wonderful by doing it.
Right.
Build on that. Let's talk about this from the other angle. You're the player, okay? And somebody's getting up for their first time to GM, particularly someone who you know is really nervous.
Get a bucket. Stop by one of those roadside stands that you see in the summer. Buy their day-old tomatoes and just keep that bucket there. And whenever they do, whenever they look at you, just pat the bucket of tomatoes and give them that sly smile.
You're a whole lot nicer than I was. I thought this was going to end with you getting like 2 gallons of lamb's blood or something.
Lamb's blood?
You're a sick man. I can't believe you brought that.
You're a sick man. Lamb's blood? Although I do love me some lamb. I love lamb.
I figured it was going to be something like 2 buckets, 1 new GM or something.
You are a sick... You have the new title now. You are a sick man, Pat.
Thank you.
All right. So, first most obvious thing, but we're going to try to break this down into some more details. Don't be a douche. All right.
Even if your group is like that group I just described earlier, where it's fun, punch you on the shoulder, kidding, and, you know, it's like, what's that trope called where you cut all your friends down, and but it's all in fun and everyone knows it? It's it's the one that Fear the Boot's actually on.
Vitriolic best friends, yeah. Or something like that. Yeah. I can't think what the exact wording is.
You know, you might want to consider still doing that, but tone it down a little bit. And
in this context, they might take the joke seriously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is if the person is nervous and is having a hard time, right, and is struggling. It's, you know, if the person's tough, you have that kind of relationship with them and the game went fine and they know it went fine, you know, but whatever. But
everything that we do has a context. Don't crack jokes at a funeral. And this is kind of the same thing. You're dealing with someone who's struggling with a lot of fear, a lot of nervousness. It took a lot for them to get up there and do it. Mm-hmm. Be supportive. So, you know, don't cut them down. The other thing is, you know what? Think about what they're struggling with. And this is real easy if you GM. What is hard about GMing, particularly when you're new to it? Mm-hmm. Giving good descriptions, being clear about where things are located. If you're in a room with 6 guards that are running every which way and cover, and it's hard to keep all that separated. Give them some slack. If they contradict themselves, mm-hmm, ask for clarification, but don't beat them up over it. Don't rules lawyer them. Mm-hmm. These guys are struggling to keep the game on track, so don't be tying them up in all kinds of asinine details that really don't matter to the course of the game.
Right. Don't sabotage the game. You know, if a person is struggling, they're new to this, they're struggling, do not roll in there, and if you're not having a good time, don't destruct their game on them.
Right.
Actually talk to them and say, hey, these are the issues that I'm having. You know, it's like, what can we do to fix this? How, you know, and frame it right. Not, you know, you asshole, fix this game, but more like, you know, what can we do to fix this? How can we all work together? What are the issues you guys are having? What are your problems with the players? What can we change? Here's what I think you can do that you can change.
Along those lines, be polite in your feedback. Give this person some encouragement.
Mm-hmm. But I do want to be careful here, because we're giving a lot of advice of walking on eggshells, being very careful, holding people at an arm's distance, holding their hands, and your mileage may vary.
Right.
You know, it's all within context, it's all with the person, and don't overdo it. Don't as a player think that you have to be afraid to give advice or to play the game, or, oh, am I going to insult the guy? Oh, is he a friend? You know, maybe your friend's not a fragile little teacup. Maybe he could take some nice joshing and and kind of go on with it.
But, well, I think that you should just approach it as, think of it this way, as from the player standpoint, when you're playing under this new GM, think of it as if it were you up there doing what he's doing, and what you do, just consider, hey, what if that was me, and approach it in that way. And I think that'll, and that can go any way. I mean, it could be, oh, okay, well, I would josh around a little bit, or yeah, I understand that is, you know, this is probably pretty hard. I haven't done that. So, you know,
right.
And, but yeah, I like, you know, what we're saying.
The ye old golden rule,
the,
man.
Yeah, exactly. The golden rule is great. And, and the constructive criticism is the stuff you want to do. And it's constructive criticism. It's not just you're going to say, hey, man, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I wasted 4 hours of my life on your crap game. That was fantastic.
But, you know, try to think of make suggestions criticism. For to help, whatever. So, yeah.
Dan, I have some bad news for you.
Okay.
I think one of our listeners is a little not exactly pleased with you and your email habits about how
I don't have any email habits. Yeah, there's nothing to criticize.
That's the problem. You don't check your email. And he emailed you and asked for some advice on some role-playing aspect of it. And you never emailed him back. And he emailed me, of all people. You know, it's desperate when they come to me. And
I should probably not mention this now, but when I typically go through my email, I get freaked out and overwhelmed by it. Talking about production anxieties, I have one of those with like communication, because sometimes there's not that much. Other times there's so much. And I'm like, man, I don't have time for this. And then it's so old. And I'm like, great. Now I got to lead them off with, I'm so sorry it took me so long to reply. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be embarrassing. So then I put it off again. And occasionally I'll dig way back in there and find a gem, like, oh, there was a guy that worked on Serenity who wanted to talk to us.
I'm going to read just a little section of his email.
I guess actually Firefly, not Serenity, but go on. I'm sorry.
I'm going to read a little section of his email, and then, you know, I won't read it verbatim.
Right, okay.
We'll discuss this
problem. All right, that's fine.
I realize Dan never checks his email, so I'm just going to forward it to you. I hope you'll be able to help me, unlike some of the other hosts of the show.
If mommy says no, go ask dad.
That's right.
Or if mommy's pretending to be deaf, blind, and mute.
I suppose I should check my email. I haven't done that in
You should, Pat. Ever. You're a terrible person. You're an absolutely terrible person.
It's true.
Basically,
as the moderating host of this show, you ought to know what people are saying.
That's right. Pretty much, I don't want to get in and read his email verbatim, especially since he's just so tiffed with you right now.
Okay, right.
Pretty much what this guy is saying is that he has a group, an RPG group.
Really?
And he has about four friends, only one of which has any experience with RPGs.
Okay.
So we're talking like newbies.
Okay, so it's a new RPG group. Right. Okay, I'm with you.
He has three other friends who are expressing interest. They want to join up.
Okay.
But these three friends have role-playing game experience and theater backgrounds.
Oh my.
And he's wanting to know, my questions, would a group of seven people overwhelm my newbies? Is seven people too much in general? Would this large group help or hurt the RP in the group? Basically what he's asking is, are the veterans gonna intimidate the new guys?
Probably,
especially in a big group.
I would stop and ask a big question about what these people are like. Every theater person I've ever known is typically pretty off the wall. These people, they're vocal.
They're in theater for a
reason. They're in theater for a reason. Yeah. There's a reason that attracted them. These are not people who generally have a lot of fear about standing up in front of people and going a little bit crazy. So that right there would worry me. So what I would start with is the three newbies.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your big unknowns. Are these people outgoing? Are they nervous about this? Are they going to be uncertain? Are they the type that are going to get talked down? If the answer to this is yes, put the brakes on this whole thing. Because I'll tell you right now, and even if they're all fine with this, seven people's a damn lot of players.
Yeah, that's a big group.
That's big.
That's rough to GM in any situation. What you almost might want to consider doing, depending on how much these people know each other, is split them into either two groups, either the three newbies and the veteran guy on one side and the theater guys on another, or
pull in
one, swap them.
Yeah, with you, that's four and four.
So you have a veteran, a theater guy, and two newbies, and the other group, you've got the rest of them. And see how these people are doing. Because, man, I tell you right now, the biggest concern I would have long before I'd worry about the newbies, I do worry about them. That's my number two concern.
Because you don't want to drive them away from the hobby.
No, absolutely not. But seven people is just, that's a lot of players for anything.
Right.
That's
right.
How are, especially if these people are really vocal, are you going to be able to give sufficient attention to each of these people? Or maybe they will. And
now, here's my advice too. Let's say for a minute that the social situation kind of demands that this group happen. You know, they're all friends, they're really gung-ho for it, and people just start showing up. And okay, now you've got a mixed group, seven people, half are good, half are total noobs. Pull the veterans aside and talk to them.
Yes.
Get them on your side and say, your job is to get those guys
into the hobby,
into this.
Because you say, this campaign is for everyone.
Yeah.
But this first game or two is for them.
That's right.
Because we're trying to bring them up to speed. My dad had a great saying. He grew up next to a train yard, so this analogy is not a shock. They used to say that in order for a locomotive to move a train, it first has to back up to where the cars are, and then it can move them forward. It's exactly what's going on here. Find out what kind of people these newbies are. If they're not that outgoing, consider either shrinking the group, splitting the group, or at least, like Chad said, talk to your old players and say, look, guys, we need to get these guys into the hobby, because if we're just screaming and swinging off the chandeliers and throwing dice at each other, they're going to be overwhelmed. They're going to be spooked. They're never going to get involved.
Now, my personal advice to him, now I don't know the situation and this could be totally bad advice. My advice to him is, you're absolutely right about Dan. He is kind of a jerk and he doesn't answer his emails. But my other piece of advice is, rise to the challenge. You've got a handful of veteran players that, if they are veteran players, they played games before, they understand. They understand the ups and downs, the problems. Get them on your side and tell them that the first handful of games are going to be all about the new guys, and they're going to get bored. You know, they're theater people and they're active and they want to get involved in this. Give them NPCs. You know, they have their characters and stuff. Give them NPCs to play while they're doing it so that they don't try to kind of go forward and really get them on your side. Get them to help you out and mentor them. Tell them to give those guys the spotlight and push them forward.
Two things also come to mind is, when you get to the time to ask them what their actions are. Okay, you guys are in town. What are you doing? Don't just let it be a general yell fest, because the new people might get bashful and never get involved. Something that I found works great in mixed groups, really, I guess even completely homogenous groups, is go around the table. Say, okay, you've just arrived in town. What are you going to do? Maybe don't start with the newbies because they're uncertain, but start with somebody else and say, okay, what are you doing? Well, I'm going to go investigate this or that. Yeah. Okay.
And you know, if they're really rambunctious, they're going to be like, well, I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And you cut them off. Say, what you're doing this.
Yeah, it's not an all before next breakfast
person.
Thing.
Yep. Next person.
What is it you're doing? Next person, what are you doing? Next person, what are you doing? Make sure they all get a turn to speak. Mm-hmm. Make sure there's at least a moment where the spotlight's on them and they have to get involved.
Make the characters, like, not the players, but make the characters interconnected and interdependent on each other, too.
That's another possibility. And also, depending on the type of flavor of game these people want, you may also find that you can create enough side RP. Mm-hmm. And I've been in games like this where I can be GMing for one or two guys, resolving their actions, rolling some dice, and the two or three other guys at the table are RPing out a conversation they're having on the side about something else. And you might be able to get that going depending on the type of people. Mm-hmm. Along those lines, let's just talk about the raw mechanics here. I kind of reacted to the size of the group. Pick a game that's going to work for seven people.
Right.
Pick a game that can accommodate comfortably a party of that size and is not going to bog down combat where it's going to take 3 years because you have seven PCs and 45 NPCs on the map at once. I would not run Battletech with seven guys. Mm-hmm. Combat would take 3 days to resolve.
Yeah,
I'd hesitate to even run D&D with seven guys. A game I found is great for large groups, and your mileage will vary, but Star Trek was always great.
Yeah,
because
the roles were defined.
Yeah, you have defined roles. Everyone's got a position. Everyone's
there's
got an expertise.
There's a chain of command.
Most people watch Star Trek, so even a new role player knows where they fit in. And guess what? In combat, typically somebody's dead the minute a trigger's pulled. Phasers don't hurt. Phasers vaporize.
Right.
And so you don't have to worry about combat taking 3 weeks to resolve. So those are definitely some things I would consider. Mm-hmm. So if you've got any more questions for me, send them to my email address at chat@heartheboot.com.
You jackass.
So
do you have anything to say to Mike Cribbs?
I'm sorry.
There you go.
As for the rest of you guys, thank you for tuning in and not being snarky. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.